Welcome back to the Georgia Show. I am back from Beirut. I want to talk about that trip a little later in the show, but we had a lot of drama today on Capitol Hill, and we want you to know what it all really means. And I think we've got it laid out for you so that you can understand exactly what's happening, because really we're in some critical times right now, don't you think, Bill?
I indeed do. And I think we've kind of foreshadowed them, and I think we are into the first squall lines of this. So.
Yes. So stay with us at the Georgia Record and at CDM, and we're going to steer you in the right direction. This is one of our motivating, agendas here, is to really help the audience figure out what's going on. So you're going to want to stick with us over the next several months to years, as you have over the last several years. We're brought to you by the Georgia Record tonight, georgiarecord.com. Please sign up for our socials, our video channel, CDM1 on Rumble, CDM on YouTube. Please go check that out, even if you haven't. Even if you don't watch us there, we need to grow those numbers, and that's growing nicely. CDM_press on X and Georgia Record on X. And also our no ad subscriptions, my.cdm.press. We're really getting a lot of success on this, and we want to keep it rolling. It gives you access to all of our content with no ads, and we're putting out a lot of content from Beirut all the way to other locales, which you will hear about more in the coming weeks. As we try to stay on the, we really are at the leading edge. This is our calling card at CDM. We're on the leading edge of a lot of stories. And I think you're going to get that leading edge insight tonight, which we try to bring every show. So, Bill, what do we have today?
Well, let's first talk about what we talked about in the last show, because I think it relates directly to what we experienced today. This was our opening card from the last show. And it asked the question, is accountability coming? And that can mean a lot of things in a lot of different areas based on all the strange stuff that's happened in the last, I'll call it 5 or 6 years, both in the U.S. and really around the world. I think today we will decide in the weeks and months to come that today was one of those days when we see the mysteries beginning to unravel, and unravel in ways that, as we've said, some of this is going to be difficult. It's going to be dark, and it's going to be painful for many. And I believe today was one of those days. To begin, we saw a testimony, or perhaps lack thereof, from Mr. Anthony Fauci in front of a Senate hearing in Congress today. And what did he do? He took the fifth, and he took it 111 times. And it sounds almost comedic to say that, but it's anything but comedic once you begin to think about the implications of what this means. This is the gentleman that throughout 20 and 21 into 22 caused people to do things, to take shots that they didn't need, perhaps. And we've heard from the McCullough Institute and others that those shots today, we know, cause more problems than they solve. People have lost their jobs. People have lost their families. People have had their parents and kids die because of COVID. And as we learn more about this as it goes forward, unfortunately, we believe that this is going to show in many ways who was behind it, and eventually what its reasoning was. So let's jump in, and we're going to take a look at what some of the testimony showed during today's hearings, one of which was Fauci walked in supposedly with six attorneys, is what I am told. Why would he walk in with six attorneys? Well, why do people attorney up? They attorney up when they know they need protection. And in one of these reports, I think we're going to hear who one of these attorneys was, and it's pretty fascinating. Let's take a look at this first.
The attorneys are not recognized. In fact, the attorney was told not to sit at the table, and he's not obeying that recommendation. There's a row behind you, sir. That's where you were told to sit, and you're not. And now you're disrupting the proceedings. And so, look, this is the way Anthony Fauci wants to be remembered, for a lawyer not listening to the rules. That's the way you want to be remembered, and that's what you're going to do. You are not recognized, sir. Security, please remove him from the room.
I just hope to hear.
Let the record state that Dr. Fauci will still have the advice of the other half a dozen attorneys that he brought along today.
Oh, it seemed maybe he brought seven. I misspoke perhaps and said six. Let's see further questioning from Rand Paul.
Were you ever made aware of gain of function research on monkeypox being conducted at the National Biodefense Analysis and Countermeasure Center and back at Fort Detrick?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
Dr. Fauci, did the CIA ever transfer funds to NIH under an interagency agreement?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
And it goes on from there. One of the things that many people are now posting is, why would somebody take the Fifth? What is it that is so critically important to be hidden, especially when he has asserted that he has a pardon from Joe Biden? We're going to address that a little bit later on in the broadcast. But the next questioner really delves into the pleading the Fifth issue. Let's take a look at this.
Chairman, well, nothing says honesty like taking the Fifth, huh, Doc? Let's try something. What day of the week is it today?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
What color tie are you wearing?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
What color is the carpet in front of you?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
Let's just get one thing straight. You don't have any rights under the Fifth Amendment because you've been pardoned, as you very well know. As the Supreme Court has been clear for a century and more, Brown versus Walker, 1896, when he has been pardoned, he may not stand upon his privilege. You know that. Your lawyers sitting behind you now shifting nervously in their chairs. They know it. This isn't about the Constitution. This isn't about the law. This is about contempt. Contempt for this body and contempt for the American people. But I think I know why you're doing it. It's because you don't want to answer questions. It's because you did all kinds of terrible things. It's because during the pandemic, you got rich, didn't you? You got rich while people were dying, hundreds of thousands of Americans, over a million in the end, and you were getting rich. And not only were you doing that, you were using federal employees with taxpayer money to apply for and solicit cash prizes for you personally, cash prizes totaling over $1 million. You did all of that during the pandemic, didn't you? That's a question.
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
Pretty interesting that he's got this down. What most people will remember is, in most circumstances, if you take the Fifth, if you answer any question following that, including in front of a grand jury, you have given up the right to plead the Fifth. So somebody has apparently coached him to, once he's said it, he sticks with it. He did have an opening remark. We're not going to play that because I find it BS. And, you know, the rest of it is him simply saying, I'm not going to answer any questions. What is the legality of doing that when he's been given a pardon? If I get this right, I believe this is Rand Paul instructing him on that. Bear with me for just a moment.
In the red folder on your table is a copy of Section 192 of Title II of the U.S. Code. Your counsel has been provided a copy as well. That section makes it a crime for a witness appearing under subpoena to refuse to answer any questions pertinent to the question under inquiry. Do you have that in front of you?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
Let the record record that the witness has refused to answer whether there's a folder in front of him based on his Fifth Amendment right.
It just gets better and better. So what are the things that he does not want to say in public? Well, this next might give us a hint as to some of them.
Under your NIAID coronavirus, researchers also used aborted baby body parts in mice research, and taxpayers paid for them to do that. NIH-funded coronavirus researcher Dr. Ralph Barrick and his colleagues at UNC put parts of livers, thymuses, and chunks of human fetal lung that they got from aborted, almost five-month-old human babies. They put those parts in their research mice. They disgustingly named them BLTL mice and wrote they had created a, quote, sandwich of aborted body parts in the mice. Get it, folks? BLT. A BLT sandwich. Your RML lab employees in Montana also ordered and used aborted baby body parts in their taxpayer-funded research. And emails show how they plan to use those mice for post-COVID work. NIH funded putting aborted babies' fingers and scalps off the heads of aborted babies and putting them into the backs of research mice. The scalps later grew fine baby hair in the mice. They even included those disgusting photos in their research paper that you funded. Not all of those were research on coronaviruses, but some were. Thankfully, the current NIH director has said no more of this. Dr. Fauci, yes or no? Do you think that human aborted parts should be put into mice for coronavirus research?
The advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
Are we beginning to see how dark this is?
Yep.
Aborted baby body parts. Let's hear from Ron Johnson as he steps in.
Again, Avaeus doesn't prove causation, but, you know, there's correlation. It's there for a safety signal. So ivermectin, over 30 years of FDA reports, 17 deaths per year. Hydroxychloroquine, over 38 years of reporting, 142 deaths per year. Remdesivir, over 5.5 years, 546 deaths per year. The COVID injection, almost 7,000 deaths per year. Which is safest? What did the FDA freak us out about ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, when they turn a complete blind's eye toward the injections injury? So I want to enter the quote from the surgeon. By the way, here's the answer. Cheryl Atkinson in an interview said that when it comes to money, we check financial ties among experts on the government panel devising coronavirus treatment guidelines, which had the effect of dialing back hydroxychloroquine use and giving an edge to remdesivir. We found the 11 members reporting links to a drug company, 9 of them named relationships to remdesivir's maker, Gilead. 7 more, including 2 of the committee leaders, have ties to Gilead beyond the 11 months they had to disclose. 2 were on Gilead's advisory board, others were paid consultants or received research support and honoraria. By the way, within the study, I think one of the study participants was an employee of Gilead. A bunch also had conflicts with Gilead. So, gee, I wonder why. You know, there are conflicts of interest. Gilead made billions of dollars off of remdesivir and people died. In terms of ignoring safety signals, you can probably put that down now. This has come to light. This is Dr. Drew Weissman, who got the Nobel Prize for the mRNA platform. He wrote to Dr. Fauci on February 8th of 2020. Tony, I wanted to alert you to some...
And then Johnson continues with a bit more here.
The only question is, based on your lack of testimony here today, based quite honestly on our investigation into the cover-up of safety signals and injection injuries, we have issued letters to a number of former FDA officials to come in for transcribed interviews. You will be getting a letter today asking for a volunteer transcribed interview. So I'd be asking, will you comply or will I have to subpoena you?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
Expecting a subpoena. Thank you.
Senator Scott.
And then, of course, now the questions begin to turn toward, you know, what are the implications for Fauci himself, given what's now occurred? We can't forget the things that have been previously reported that are just sound incredibly nefarious. We just heard things about baby parts and BLT sandwiches made of mice with injected baby parts. Now the question becomes, he was given a pardon by so-called President Biden. Is that pardon enough to get him out of trouble, or is he in deep doo-doo? Well, the debate has already started. We're going to play a couple of things to give you a sense of it. And Anna Paulina Luna weighed in with some thoughts as well.
This has probably never been tested legally if you've been granted complete immunity. We didn't grant him immunity, but the president, President Biden, granted him complete immunity. With a grant of immunity, do you still need Fifth Amendment protections, or do they apply? So, and telling that all he had to do today was tell the truth. If he testified and told the truth, even if he admitted to destroying thousands of records, which we think happened, there's no penalty that attaches. It would just be the truth.
How do you respond to his comments that you have an unhinged obsession with him?
I think if you...
That was the unhinged obsession was a charge that Fauci made in trying to cover his own actions before beginning his 111 repeat of the Fifth Amendment. Let's listen to this. It's a little lengthy, but it is an important consideration given what we've learned about the Biden administration and their proliferant use of the auto pen.
The Constitution vests executive power in a single person, the president. At the founding, the president exercised the executive power through only a small group of trusted advisors and personnel. In fact, President Washington had a four-member cabinet. Today, the president directs a Leviathan executive branch with 15 cabinet departments and at least 4 million full-time executive branch employees. The executive branch proliferation has a single source of democratic legitimacy. That by order of U.S. Constitution's Article 2, the president is both elected by the American people and vested with the executive power, all of it. Traditionally, the president takes positive actions and authenticates those actions through his signature. His signature is required for the most significant actions he may undertake, to sign an executive order, to take any action invested in him by the Constitution, as in granting a pardon, and to take the most important action of all, to sign a bill into law. In all these cases, the president's signature is itself the protection of democratic principle. When the president signs, he communicates his assent and endorsement of the action he takes. The auto pen is a device that signs the president's signature to a document. The Oversight Project, of which I am a board member, has discovered that the Biden White House deployed an auto pen to affix President Biden's signature to pardons, prison commutations, executive orders, and presidential proclamations. The Oversight Project's research has found that the Biden White House first deployed the auto pen to affix President Biden's signature to a proclamation on day 5 of his administration, and that there were at least 3 different auto pen signatures in use throughout President Biden's tenure in the White House. In June 2022, the Biden White House began deploying the auto pen to sign clemency warrants and executive orders. Auto pen use skyrocketed from there. We found that of the 51 clemency warrants issued during the Biden presidency, over half, 32 in total, were signed with an auto pen. And these include some of the most controversial acts of clemency of the Biden presidency, including death row commutations and the preemptive pardons of members of the Biden family, Dr. Anthony Fauci, General Mark Milley, and more that were issued in the final days of the Biden presidency. We reviewed President Biden's schedule in his publicly available media and were unable to find any record of President Biden's personally approving these actions, such as a statement issued by the president himself to reporters. In addition, we found that the Biden White House used the auto pen to affix President Biden's signature to clemency warrants and executive orders while the president himself was in Washington, D.C. for at least some of that day and thus was presumably available to sign important executive actions. Finally, we found multiple days where President Biden wet signed a bill into law, but used an auto pen to issue an executive order or for other important executive actions. The Biden White House's widespread use of an auto pen to affix President Biden's signatures to documents that exercise executive powers belonging solely to the president poses significant constitutional, legal, and practical considerations. Once the president's signature is copied and loaded into the auto pen, the machine can sign documents as the president himself would. To be blunt, by using the auto pen, anyone can sign documents as the president himself.
You heard him say that they listed some of the actions taken in the last days of the presidency. Preemptive pardons for members of Biden's family, and he mentioned Dr. Anthony Fauci. One of the things I will call out at this stage is that as we saw Fauci testify, at no time did he seem to show concern, remorse, sorrow at the things that had been done. He seemed to sit there very stoically and simply repeat the sentence that he had been given, obviously, by his attorneys. So what happens now? Well, it's clear that the question about whether the pardon, if indeed it was signed with auto pen, is valid. That's piece one. Piece two is any additional actions that Fauci may have taken following that pardon would not have been covered by the pardon. And so if there's other things that he did following that that are discovered, those could open up the door for penalties. And Ana Paulina Luna also calls out this. And she refers to him as Dr. Mengele Fauci, may be protected by a federal pardon, but that does not hold against state prosecution and civil lawsuits. I'm calling on the great attorneys general of the governors of Florida, Texas, West Virginia, and Arizona, Arkansas to bring charges against Fauci for crimes against children in exposing. And she goes on to detail what she sees as the opportunities for prosecution. Are those the only states that could do that? No. She must have some reason for going, though. She is, of course, herself from Florida. So one of the key questions here is, now that this is being exposed, one, how much worse does it get? What else are we going to learn that Fauci was not going to speak of today? And my suspicion with cause is that we're going to find out more, and it's not going to be pretty. Two, what are the implications for others now that this has come out? Here's some of those areas. So when we talk about implications, doctors themselves, either on advice or because of potentially incentives in some cases that we've learned of, gave certain advice and may have steered folks away from other advice. For example, if doctors refused or delayed or pushed people away from compounds that are now proven effective, what are the implications there? If they caused patients to get shots that are now proven ineffective or in fact harmful, what are those implications? Same kinds of questions for hospitals. And then it goes into treatment. Did hospitals do what they should have done given what we know now for early treatment? Did they appropriately use the treatments at hand? Were respirators used appropriately? Did they help or were they actually harmful? What about employers? And many of us know folks that either had to change or argue with their employers or in fact lost their jobs because they refused to become vaccinated or they refused other things that employers demanded of them. What happens to those employers now? Are they implicated? Do they have the potential for lawsuits? What else? What about the fired employees? One of which, by the way, is David Clemens, Professor David Clemens of New Mexico State University. Many posts this afternoon following his note that there is a case against New Mexico State University that he has filed, and he is asking for damages for his job back and for an apology for what they did, which was force him out and ultimately fire him. And in that state, others have continued to try to take away his license to practice law in these ensuing 4 years. What about folks like him? What about the fired military? Folks that either lost their rank, lost their job, had to leave the military under other than perhaps honorable discharge or something else. What are the implications for them and their families? And perhaps most important in this list, what about the next of kin? Millions have died, both from the disease and from the shots, and potentially other types of treatments that will be found to have been ineffective and perhaps knowingly ineffective. What happens with the next of kin? How do they get accountability? One more list. What are the implications for those who supported this? The CDC, who took it upon themselves to issue and support certain mandates, certain requirements for travel, for masking, for other things.
And they have no legal authority, Bill. I mean, people were taking them as, you know, statutory or executive power, and they don't have that authority. It's just interesting.
That's true, and that's been underscored by the Chevron deference finding in the Supreme Court last year. So you're exactly right. But people followed it. This goes back 4 years, and in fact, at that time, people acted as if they did have the ability to make what looked like rules and laws, but they did not legally. Mm-hmm. What about the FDA? What about the things that they did to either support or deny access to medications, which we now know to have been potentially effective? We've heard it again and again and again, things that are inexpensive, been around for potentially 30 years, could have been used as early treatment and prevented many people from progressing in the disease. What about the American Medical Association? What was their role? What are the implications for them? What culpability do they hold? Schools which forced kids, in some cases, to be segmented into plastic cocoons in their schoolrooms, or if they wouldn't do certain things, to be removed from school. What about the departments of health? I had the experience right here in Georgia of trying to contact our Department of Health to ask where was it possible to get a test for the Delta variant of COVID when it was supposed to be circulating in the country. And nobody could answer the question. And I said, well, how do you find out if you have the Delta variant? Oh, well, it's done during genetic testing. I said, well, who sends in the genetic tests? Oh, well, that's done on a case-by-case basis. They didn't have an answer. That's the Georgia Department of Health. I have it on recording, by the way, if they want to challenge me on it. And what about the vaccinated? What about those who have taken these shots and are walking around with this stuff potentially still in them? And I believe the McCullough Institute and others have shown that it does stay in the body for an indeterminate period of time. What do they do? We've reached out to medical experts today. And in the coming couple of days, we hope to have an interview that may answer some of those questions, but most importantly, perhaps answer what can those who have been vaccinated do? How many are there? About a third of the planet is the last estimate that I heard. So,
well, it's also the treatment in the hospitals of the elderly and the infirmed. You know, people may not even know they've been part of this, but I'll give an example. My father had COVID, got pneumonia, walked into the hospital joking. 24 hours later, they put him on palliative care, which essentially is euthanasia, before I could get there. And I had the records reviewed by the Kennedy group,
Children's Health Defense.
And yep. They paid to have the records reviewed. And they said, look, I mean, he was fidgety. He didn't want to keep his mask on. So they killed him to keep his mask on. So, you know, he didn't deserve that treatment, didn't deserve to die. The family didn't deserve it. And we asked not to give remdesivir. Initially, they gave it to him anyway. They changed the death certificate after he died to put COVID on the death certificate so they could get paid. I mean, over and over and over again. So there's going to be massive pushback in this country against, I would probably bet there's millions of those deaths in the U.S. that fit that exact pattern. And right. So if you're part of that, then, you know, let's get together and let's push back on this.
Well, and that's a very good point. One of the cases is, if folks are in the middle of this, and those who are probably know it, you've got two choices. You either help the cause going forward and help potentially yourself and your position in all of this, or you do what Fauci's doing and others, you clam up, you don't help, and whatever comes, whatever that may be.
And well, what gets me, Bill, is why is this just coming out now? I mean, we've known this for years. So what is the, you know, what is the push? I mean, I have my guesses inside the administration, but my point is the people that are out there that are supposed to have been tracking this did not for years. And so that needs to be watched as well.
That's a good question. Could we have been here? Could we have gotten this out earlier? Many of the things that Fauci said and many of the things that people testified have been out for a year or more, especially since, you know, the beginning of the Trump administration. But still, I haven't reviewed it today, but I would be surprised to find that legacy mainstream fake media did much to cover this today. I bet they did not. Mm-hmm. If they did cover it, they probably downplayed it. But we'll see. We'll reserve judgment until we observe what they did. Why don't we take a break? I want to come back. I'm going to cover one or two small other things that delve into this, and then I know you've got some fantastic findings to go through as well.
All right, we'll take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back on The Georgia Show.
Well, in the case of hydroxychloroquine and mm-hmm. ivermectin, mm-hmm. these are two medications that have been FDA approved for use in humans for decades. Mm-hmm. They are very, very inexpensive. Interestingly, available over the counter in almost every other country other than the U.S. and Canada. Yeah. You can just walk into a pharmacy and buy them like we buy Tylenol in much of the world because they're that safe. And we've known for decades that ivermectin has very strong antiviral properties. It has anti-inflammatory properties. And both mm-hmm. ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are what we call zinc ionophores. They help to move zinc from the bloodstream into the cell, which is where it needs to be in order to fight off a virus. So lots of application for these. And we have every reason to believe that those drugs also will likely have some efficacy against H5N1 or a number of other respiratory viruses that we may meet down the road.
Divorce is tough, but your finances don't have to be. I'm David Cross, and I'm a certified divorce financial analyst practitioner. My job is to help you get a fair financial settlement in your divorce and to guide you to smarter money decisions. Find out how we can help you. U.S. Asset Management, it's your money and your future.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Ira Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
So real quick, go to CDMMetals.com, and you can connect with Advisor Metals there. You can fill out the form and they'll call you, or you can call them. The number's there. Just tell them CDM sent you. That's important. Gold and other precious metals are down on the charts. They're forming a basing pattern. We've got a lot of international geopolitical instability. I think this is a really good time to take a look at it. Talk to your financial advisor, but either cash assets outside of your tax wrapper or in an IRA. You can use precious metals to be another store of value and as kind of a hedge. So check out cdmmetals.com. Back to you, Bill.
Okay. So the other implication to consider, we're talking about Fauci and what he did in 2020 and beyond. But let's not lose sight of the fact that literally 3 months, 2 months, and how you do the math, before COVID-19 began, there was an event held by, among others, the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, along with the Gates Foundation and a number of others, including governmental leaders and so forth. This was in October of 2019, and it was called a tabletop exercise based on a quote-unquote fictional scenario where experts used modeling to come up with what plans might need to be made in case of a worldwide pandemic. 2 months later, a month and a half later, we began hearing about what was called at that time a novel coronavirus, meaning a new coronavirus. And within weeks, it was given the name COVID-19. So is it potentially a coincidence that you would hold such a thing with worldwide leaders in October and 2 months later have it occur? Is it potentially a coincidence? Potentially, I suppose. But now that we know there's little chance for coincidence in the world, this seems like this was part of the plan. Add to it the fact that the World Economic Forum supported Event 201 and covered it extensively. They were live streaming it and connecting to it from most of the event. Again, World Economic Forum, Noah Harari, Klaus Schwab, you know, you'll own nothing and like it. That's not a coincidence. So again, as we get deeper into this, we're going to see more and more, I believe, of these kind of connections and be able to understand that this was not a mistake. It was not a coincidence. It wasn't somebody's flub in the Wuhan lab. This was something that was put together, at least in part. Why? That's going to be the key question to get to. So with that, Todd, I'm going to flip it to you, my friend.
Yes, thank you. So first, I want to start with Ukraine. There's a lot going on geopolitically, and if you follow our stuff, you understand what's happening in Ukraine, et cetera. But there is something that I want you to watch and understand specifically with Christianity. I just got back from Beirut. We had a wonderful time connecting with Christians and Christian parties and political, apparatus in Beirut. And we're going to be working closely with them and in other countries to try to join Christian youth and leaders together and build a new movement globally, because we think that's what's needed to really fight this entire, whatever you want to call it, that we're dealing with. So this happened in Ukraine this week. Let me bring this up. Laura Loomer goes to Ukraine, and all of a sudden, she's pro-Zelensky. She gets an interview with Zelensky, and she says she's Ukrainian, and she said she used to like Russia. And I'm not talking pro-Russia or pro-Ukraine here. I'm talking pro-Christianity and pro-humanity. Well, these two people are not Christians, and they are implementing one of the worst Christian persecutions in history. And you've got two Christian nations fighting each other, and Zelensky is pushing that on and on, which we believe to depopulate Ukraine. And I'm going to play something in a minute which proves my point on his actions against the Christian church. But you've also got a lot of connections from Ukraine in Georgia. So I want to make sure people still connect to Georgia. Rich McCormick has been very pro-Ukraine. Rome, Georgia had Ukrainian police show up in some weird thing. We tried to FOIA that and they sent us garbage. So we don't know how that happened. And we had a judge that was, I believe, on the state election board. Am I right, Bill? It went to Ukraine over 10 times.
That's right. So William Duffy.
what is going on here with the Georgia connection to Ukraine? So I just want to play a quick video with Laura Loomer in Ukraine this week. Let me find it. Okay, there it is. 1 second. And I will hold on just a minute. And this is a video I just want to play of her in Ukraine this week talking about drones.
Anymore. Instead, in honor of Lindsay's commitment to stand with the Ukrainian people and to stand against authoritarianism, we're going to deploy the drone to the front lines so that it can be used to kill Russians. So rest in peace, Senator Lindsey Graham, a defender for freedom and liberty all around the world.
I find that bill just incredibly disgusting. You know, warmongering to the nth degree. Senator Lindsey Graham was known for that. And now you have Laura Loomer over there enabling the attacks, multiple attacks on Christians, on the church inside Ukraine, but also this massive war, which is depopulating the Christian community in Ukraine. Now I want to play, this is Bob Amsterdam, Robert Amsterdam in London, who is the counsel for the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. So you can hear from him about, I'm not going to play all of this. All of these interviews are on CDM in our CDTV section. You just search for Robert Amsterdam. I've interviewed him like five times. But this man has been charged with trying to protect the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, the Christian church, the church that has been there for a thousand years, that people have had weddings, funerals, baptized their children. Just, it's just insane. So here you can hear what has been going on to the church inside Ukraine.
We're honored to be back with Robert Amsterdam. He is the attorney in London for the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. Robert, thank you for taking some of your time again. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
So I contacted you because I saw some video images of an infiltration, I should say, into one of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church facilities where they pretended to be invalids. And then once they got in, they attacked and beat the priests. And this was obviously some kind of quasi-government sponsored entity that did this. What say you?
Yeah, it's actually the government. Mm-hmm. As I've said before on your show, and only your show and that of Tucker Carlson, because nobody in the press is covering this, because it turns out President Zelensky's a thug. Mm-hmm. And what he's doing is he's trying to replace a 1,000-year-old church with a 5-year-old church. Mm-hmm. That's backed by his nationalist neo-Nazis in the western part of Ukraine. And shockingly, there are no holds barred. They used guys who look like they should be at the front, many of them with swastikas on their arms. They break into churches. They beat up parishioners. They steal the physical churches, over 1,500 stolen. They turn the churches into museums or relics. It's absolutely out of a terrible page of history.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned this is a nationalist element that I think is controlling Zelensky. And we did some reporting last week that he can't really, I guess, make any progress in bringing peace to Ukraine because the nationalists would take him out. Do you know anything about that? Or, I mean, well, not your focus, but.
Look, I don't know whether it's just the nationalists, mm-hmm. whether it's also the fact that he's surrounded with a bunch of people, maybe including himself, who are wildly corrupt. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's stopping anything meaningful in terms of these discussions. As you know.
So you can see that. You can see that interview on CDM, and I won't play all of it. But one more video I want to show. This is the Ukrainian Prochaska Lavra, which was just attacked and closed by the Ukrainian government. And Zelensky and Laura Loomer were there trying to show that they are, I guess, helping or protecting Christianity. Well, these are people who have lost their church after 1,000 years. And so you take a look at this and see what you think. Існа довша і повірне, і воскрешено. So that is the, what it looks like, Christian persecution. And I just want you to understand what's happening in Ukraine. It's also happening in the Middle East. It's also happening in Romania and other places. And we're trying to highlight it and bring it out into the open and connect Christian communities around the world to stop this this really evil behavior that's going on. I want to move to Flock, Bill, but before we do that, do you have any other comments?
No, I'd want to, you know, make sure people remember that you and the channel have reported and shown the steps taken by Zelensky to shut down Christianity within the Ukraine. Priests being hauled bodily from their churches, churches being shuttered, some being destroyed, priests being imprisoned. This is not what you do if you are doing anything to support Christianity. And it's very clear what the agenda is. They're trying to stamp it out.
Yes.
And it is indicative of the real agenda, regardless of what they say. You have to look at what people do, not what they say.
Completely agree. So let's change subjects for a minute. I was just in Beirut, and one of the issues over there is big in warfare. In both theaters of war are drones. This real quick is when I was in Beirut a few months earlier, this was happening as well, but it's still going on. This is a drone overflying, the sound of a drone overflying the city, and it's an Israeli drone, and you can, the Lebanese really can't do anything about it. So I just wanted to play this, and then we'll get into some of the Flock safety stuff. So that constant sound is over the city of Beirut, and it's an Israeli surveillance drone. It's hard to pick out in the sky, but it's 24/7, and it's really, really interesting. So drones are becoming very threatening and control apparatus. This is a video of someone in China. There's a beach that is not allowed to be on after dark or in the water. And so here is the future, a drone coming in to tell a man to get out of the water at dusk. So that is what's coming, my friends, to the U.S. Now let's move to Flock Safety, which is a company in Georgia. And this is a video that they are putting up. They've already put up almost 100,000 cameras around the country. You've heard a lot about this. They're in places you don't understand. And it's not just tag reading. It's Bluetooth surveillance. It's audio surveillance. And it's all kinds of other surveillance, including drones. This is a gentleman who, and they're filming you. There's no informed consent here. You know, people were not asked if they wanted to be followed constantly. And this is a man that went to the headquarters or the old building in Georgia, and it looks like Flock does not want to be filmed, which is interesting.
Hey, how you doing? Hey there, we got an interview here. I know they just moved.
With Flock?
Mm-hmm.
Who you have an interview with?
We're the news.
You know what I'm saying? Who you have an interview with?
Garrett, ideally, but if there's another representative.
You said Garrett? Garrett, the CEO?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're trying to get an interview today, yeah.
Oh, no, yeah, but there's nobody here.
Yeah. Dang, so they sent us to the wrong spot. How long ago did they move?
For like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, but we don't have anything, so we'll see you guys.
Okay, where's the spot in Buckhead?
We can't get that out.
Yeah. What is that, like for security reasons?
Yeah.
Oh, so they care about security a lot, like their own privacy?
Can they go? Yeah. Thank you.
Can we put a camera up by your house and your house? What, wait, you guys care about security here? Yeah, we also care about our privacy too. So, we'll see you guys at the next location, okay?
That's the security guard right there.
That's
That's the same guy?
Yeah, that's the security guard, 100%.
Hey, sir, we're surveilling you. Is that okay? Do you consent to being surveilled? We're just filming you right now. Do you consent to us surveilling you with our cameras? Oh, well, we're doing it for safety. Oh, no, he's getting our license plate. What are we going to do? Sir, we're not having that. You filmed us? We're filming you double now. Oh, yeah. Get him. Film him. Surveil him. Sir, does getting surveilled?
So that's obviously tongue in cheek, but the point is they don't want to be surveilled on their own. They're filming the entire country without informed consent. Did you know that you're being tracked, your vehicle, everywhere you go? Do you want everywhere you go to be known to the federal government or your local government? And there's been case after case of employees at this company. This is out in the open news, tracking their former girlfriends and doing other kind of illegal actions. It's just insane. And the drone aspect, which we showed you earlier, is coming as well. In fact, the CEO is bragging that he can have a drone somewhere in 45 seconds. So to film a situation, it's really nefarious. Bill, you have any comments?
It is very interesting. The amount of information they can gather appears to be well beyond simply surveilling cars and license plates. There are reports that there is Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, potentially audio, visual capabilities, and other things that, you know, people don't, again, they didn't give consent to have any of that tracked. There are reports that it can surveil people's faces and use facial recognition from blocks away. Mm-hmm. There's a new video that I found. I believe it's correct. That talks about a new device potentially from Flock, which is an aerial drone. And it talks about some of those capabilities. We can show that if you wish.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it talks about some of what they can do with these things. Let's take a look. All I can think of when I see that is Minority Report.
Yeah.
It's like you could expect in Minority Report, you were surveilled down to your retina scan everywhere you went. And that's what that's beginning to feel like. And to your point, why is it that they don't want to be seen, surveilled, yet they want everybody else to be? What does that mean?
Yeah, there's a lot more on that video, and you can find those on X, but it's really disturbing, and you need to be aware of it, and you need to get, here's people say, I can't do anything. Here's what you can do right now. You can FOIA your local jurisdiction for any information on Flock cameras. Do you have them? Where are they? What is being paid for them? Who made the decisions to put them in your community? Was it done legally? Can you, and then there's a group called DFlock. I'm not supporting them because I don't know enough about them. But you can find information on their website about how to oppose a lot of these cameras. And we're not, you know, we're not telling people to do anything criminal, but this has to be pushed back at the local level. And there's case after case of, because of that local pushback, the local jurisdictions removing them or turning off. LA just turned off access to the cameras to the company. And this is going to a company. This is not going to the government has access, but this is private information. They're taking all of your personal private information. You know, let's say you have a new girlfriend and you don't want anybody to know about it, whatever the situation is, and you're going to her house. They know you're going to that house. in your car, even if you don't tell anybody. They have it, and they have it logged every time to the minute when you're there. So I find this invasion of privacy disgusting, and it has to be fought against. And so we're going to stay on this story at the Georgia Record. And that's about all I have today, Bill.
Okay. So we talked about a lot of dark subjects at the beginning, and there's more to come. At the same time, if there's one thing we've learned, it's, you know, there are those who see the irony, perhaps, in the darkest times and will come out with things that perhaps seem lighthearted, but do drive the point home for those who may not be paying attention. We're going to show one of those, not because we think that the stuff with Fauci is comedic, but we think that for some that aren't paying attention, things like this might help them, and maybe it'll help you get the people that you know to pay attention to what's going on. So we'll play this and close, if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
Me the fifth. I'll be the fifth. Five. One, two, three, four, fifth. Anything you say, fifth. Go ahead, ask me a question.
Did you?
Fifth. I have a secret document that I think you need to say.
Thank you all, sir. Good afternoon. I got your sentence reduced to a month.
Oh!